Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan
with insurancebroker.ie
on News Talk.
I just want to flag with you, this next conversation is of a sensitive nature. It deals with coercive control, rape as well. And I just want to make that point just before we introduce my next guest today. Sarah Ryan is with me in studio because her former partner was jailed for 8 years for rape and coercive control of Sarah just last Friday. 27-year-old Nathan Grant McNulty of Ballyogan Avenue in Carrick Mines in County Dublin was handed a 9-year sentence with the final 12 months suspended on strict conditions. He'd pleaded guilty to charges of rape and coercive control, and Sarah waived her right to anonymity so that he could be named. And Sarah's with me in studio. Thanks for coming in, first of all, Sarah.
Thanks very much, Andrea.
So, bring us back to, so Friday, obviously, you spoke outside the courts. It's now Monday afternoon. How are you feeling now today? Like, is it...
It's still kind of a shock. Like, it still hasn't sunk in properly. It's kind of a weird feeling. I don't know. It's because it's gone on for so long, for so many years. Like, in total, 7 years, but then 4 years for obviously going through all the courts and stuff like that. So, it kind of, I don't think, has settled in yet. Yeah. Really, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably a bit of a weight lifted off your shoulders.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I can breathe properly now. I'm not kind of just waiting for this and the next court date and the next court date to come along, do you know, that kind of way. I kind of can move on now with everything and kind of start living my life again.
Yeah. And, you know, I suppose in one sense, it's Christmas week too, and, you know.
Yeah,
you...
yeah, so I'm excited about that now as well. Like, I feel like I could breathe again.
Good. Can you bring us back to the beginning, Sarah? And as much now as, you know, you feel comfortable telling us today, can you tell us a little bit about the early days of your relationship?
And yeah, so we met in 2018 and everything kind of happened so fast. Like, we moved into a fast relationship and I remember, like, the abuse and stuff started really quickly. Okay. So, like, about 2 weeks in, the control and stuff started and the manipulation, and I think he got into my head and kind of brainwashed me really quickly, and I was so young as well, so I didn't know what was right from wrong, really, do you know? And
what age were you at the time?
I was 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't really know. I thought, oh, well, someone that acts like this, he must care so much and he really wants such control and stuff like that, you know? And then I got pregnant really quickly with him as well, maybe about 4 weeks into that. So then I feel like he had me really trapped. Sorry, I can't.
Yeah, no, you're okay. No, take your time. So for you, looking back, there were signs from the very beginning, really,
yeah,
from early on.
Looking back now, like, from very early on, and I think I kind of knew that some things were wrong, but it was more fear and terror than anything else. Like, he had me in such fear. Like, he used to tell me that he would take my child away from me. And I was kind of the only one raising him. He didn't really, like, involve himself in that. But I never knew, like, there was anything like Women's Aid or anything like that.
Yeah.
Or protection orders or any help out there. He threatened that he'd kill my family. And I just thought, if he could do that to me, then he could do that to anybody. And I was in such fear that he would take my child. And I just didn't want to let that happen. That I felt like I was protecting everybody else by just taking it and letting all that happen to me.
And you were still together at the stage of the birth of your son, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
What's his name?
His name's Bobby.
Bobby.
Yeah. He's 7 in February.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, he just had me under such fear and control that I just thought that was my life and I had to just put up with it until maybe Bobby was 18 and I could leave then. I was just in terror that he would take him and I'd never see him or he would hurt him. Yeah, because Bobby was kind of there through everything, through all of the abuse, and he didn't really care whether he was in the room or present or not.
Was it, how frequent, like, when you talk about the abuse there, how frequent was it?
It was constant. So every day it was like walking on eggshells. You didn't know what was the right thing to say or do, and then you're trying to prevent it by not trying to annoy him and not trying to say things that would kind of make him freak out at you or give out or make him angry and stuff like that.
You were constantly walking on eggshells.
Yeah, yeah. I was like a shell of myself. I didn't know. I only knew what I was told, basically. I didn't know what to be doing.
And do you think, looking back now, were your family, you know, your extended family and friends, were they aware of this or as aware of it at the time?
I don't think anyone knew to the extent of what was going on. But I'm like so blessed for my family and friends, because if it wasn't for them, I don't think that I'd even be here, to be honest. Especially my mom, like she kind of knew, well, she did know, she's my mom, and she made it her business to kind of get me out of that. But he would make me fall out with my friends, because obviously he thought, well, if they know, he didn't want them saying anything to me and then me like leaving or getting the courage to take back my own control and stuff like that.
You were really living under this sort of rule or control in the house.
I was just felt like I was surviving, basically, just day to day. Sometimes I kind of wish that he would just put me out my misery, you know, but that was just the way I was feeling then. I don't feel like that anymore, of course not.
When, Sarah, you know, was there a turning point, or when did you decide, like, at what point did you say, I've had enough of this, I can't put up with this anymore?
It was probably the February, I left in the March, and the February he had attacked me really badly.
Physically,
yeah. So I had like bruises all over my face. He threw things. I had like two black eyes. I had to go get x-rays and stuff. And then my mom actually saw, and I made up a lie that was, I got in a fight and I didn't. And she just knew.
She
just said, when you're ready, like, I'm here. And then she explained obviously about women's aid and stuff like that. So it was actually really weird. It was like something from a movie. One of the mornings I just got up and she used to collect Bobby for me to bring him to creche.
Yeah.
And I used to go to work. And it was like Nathan knew that something was going on, because he actually followed me to work that day. And I was texting my mom saying, don't text me, please. Because I really thought that he was going to kill me. So I went into work, and then he left. My mom came into my job then, and then we just went to Dolphin's house and got an emergency protection order, and that was kind of the ball rolling then. But I kind of knew that I wanted to leave from ages ago. I didn't know what to do. That was really,
but it's incredibly hard. You know, nobody knows till they're in
that
situation, and in, you know, in the situation you were in, Sarah, to know even what to do or where to turn or who to contact. And
and I was so afraid. I didn't want to get anybody else in trouble or hurt by him too. But it was just crazy. It doesn't feel real. It's kind of mad, like, thinking now, looking back on it, because it happened so long ago. But everything kind of obviously just,
it all sort of spiraled out.
Yeah.
So once your mum mentioned Women's Aid and you touched base with them, how can you tell us, maybe, even because I'm just thinking of other people, you know, listening to your story today, and maybe this resonates with them or it's something they're going through. So what was that experience like when you were dealing with Women's Aid?
Women's Aid were amazing, like amazing. They couldn't have done enough help for me. So they have an office on the top floor of Dolphin's house. And we went in that day, and I got an emergency protection order that has to get signed by the judge then. And then actually I was...
And they helped with all that?
They helped with everything. They give you advice on where to go, what to do. I actually had a really nice lady that I still keep in contact with. Her name's Lisa.
Right.
She works in Women's Aid. She came to court with me. She helped me through everything, helped me like with support and stuff like that. And like point you in the right direction. Like I couldn't thank Women's Aid enough for everything
they
that they've done.
Right.
Yeah, they've been amazing. They have.
So they were, and that's a big thing, because, you know, often, and I'm sure you've heard this over the years, you hear people talking about going through the courts process and, you know, how isolating and how lonely that can be. But that's, so they were there with you the whole way
through.
Yeah,
and it's really intimidating as well, like going through court, especially if you're not used to it.
No, sure. And most people will never have seen the inside of a courtroom, you know.
Yeah.
So it's,
but no, they've had my back so much. Right. Even anybody you get in contact with there, like, that you don't deal with, they've, can't do enough to help you. They're really, really supportive, and it's a great like company and stuff like that to go through. Like if anybody, even for advice, like they have a great helpline and stuff like that. If you're not sure if certain things are happening to you that are wrong and stuff like that, they really know.
They help.
Yeah, they're really great.
Because, you know, coercive control up till kind of recent years wasn't something we talked about really in Ireland, you know, and a lot of people wouldn't have been aware of it and the effect of it and the impact of it. But even for you, at the young age of 20, like when you think back now, you could nearly see the signs of it from the very, very early days.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you're in that, you don't really, you're kind of in flight or flight. But then coming out of that now, looking back, I'm going, oh my God, if only I, well, not that I did have the courage to leave, but sooner. But like, I think anybody could say that, but I think I left at the right time.
That day, you know, the day you decided to leave, and I know your mum had said to you previously, if you ever need, you know, that we're there and we'll help you through that.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that day? Like, I mean, was Bobby with you when you decided to walk out? And
So that morning, it was just kind of like any morning. Got up, got ready for school, got ready for work. But my mum kind of had this plan in motion, and she was texting me, she's going, are you ready? And I was going, no, I'm not ready. I have to wait. I think it's just more fear than anything else. And then she took Bobby. She left, went down to my work, kind of waited for me to come down. And as I said, it was like he knew something was going on. So he followed me down to work and was fighting with me. And then when we got there, he left a few minutes later. And then me and my brother and my mum actually went to Dolphin's house then to get the protection order. And then I went straight to the guards then to report everything. Mm.
So your mum and brother were, they were obviously in the vicinity of work, were they? Or they were nearby? And
yeah, they were down there waiting for me. Yeah,
they were waiting for you.
So because it had only been a week after he physically assaulted me really badly.
So that's when it was, you decided it was, you leaving was the week after that physical
so
assault?
So I kind of thought, well, it's only going to get worse the next time. He's going to either kill me or leave me in a really, really bad way. And then I was in fear for Bobby too. That, well, if he's going to do it to me, he's going to do it to him as well. So
was Bobby, the day of the, this was that really horrendous physical assault, Sarah, was Bobby in the house at the time?
Yeah, there was a few people in the house. It was really early in the morning. He'd come home from a football match and he wouldn't leave me alone. I tried to turn and go back asleep. Again, wouldn't leave me alone. And then he just started attacking me out of nowhere, and it went on for a few hours. And I just tried to stay silent because I didn't want anybody to hear me and wake up. I didn't want Bobby. I didn't want anyone else getting hurt. So I just thought it'll end soon. It'll be fine. I'm like, not used to it, but it can't get any worse than this kind of. And so I just lay there and took it.
Gosh. So you were obviously hugely concerned for Bobby after all of this, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
That was the motivation, really, was it?
He's the one that kept me going. Mm-hmm. I really believe, like, if it wasn't for him, obviously my family, really wouldn't be here today.
You've great support, it sounds like.
Oh, I have amazing support. My friends, my family, my new partner, even Bobby, like, he's just kept me going. Yeah. I'm so, so lucky. And I know not everybody's as lucky as me to have such support, but it's great. Like, it really kept me going the last few years. It's been a hard few years. Like,
What age is Bobby now?
He's 6. He'll be 7 in February. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So this has obviously been a difficult time for, you know, I'm sure him too. And you're trying to,
of course,
mind him. And
he was just as affected by it as me. Like, for someone so young, like, he wasn't eating. He had anxiety. He was like afraid of his own shadow. But like, he's a completely different boy now. You wouldn't even know. Yeah, he's amazing.
And so when you went to the guards and you talked to the guards about this, how was that experience, Sarah?
It was actually really scary, because you do hear of people going and telling their story. Yeah. And not that they're not believed, but even not enough evidence, or they can't do anything, or it's too late and stuff like that. But I was actually really lucky. My whole experience with the guards and stuff, it was long, but It worked out great for me. Like, they actually were really supportive, and I feel like everybody had my back through everything, even though I was told I wouldn't be believed. And
by my former partner,
yeah, I was told I wouldn't be believed, and he'd tell everybody I was crazy and I was mad, because like throughout that I lost my dad suddenly, so I was kind of really down and low as it was. So
You're in a vulnerable position, and
he made me believe that everyone would think that I was crazy, and that nobody would believe him, because nobody thought that he had done to me the extent that he did. Like,
once you went to the guards, and from the point of, you know, kind of engaging with Women's Aid and the protection order and going to the guards and reporting all of this, how long was that, Sarah, from that point? You know, we'll say to Friday there, to sentencing.
4 years.
4 years.
So I left in 2021, was it? Or 22? It was 4 years, and anyways, altogether, from when I went to the guards to the sentencing. Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the case goes to the DPP and, yeah. and then it's court and...
Yeah, so, and then it just kept getting pushed back in court and pushed back in court. So this was supposed to be over and done with in May. But then it got pushed back and then another thing made it push back. And then so it was finally done then on Friday.
Yeah, so the 18th of December.
Yeah.
It's a date that I'm sure you'll remember for a long time.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely.
So when the judge sentenced Nathan to 8 years for rape and coercive control, Sarah, what was going through your mind when you heard that timeline?
I was in shock. I was trying to pick my job off the floor because I don't think I've ever seen that either or heard of that, like, especially for the two charges, do you know what I mean? And he got the maximum for the coercive control, which is very hard, like 5 years. And it kind of felt like a powerful moment.
For you, good. Yeah,
yeah, it was kind of like I knew I could do it.
Yeah.
And he done all that to me and he thought that he could get away with it. Whereas I'm obviously much stronger than that and didn't let that happen.
Yeah.
I didn't let him get away with it.
So you were happy with the sentence?
Yeah, I was happy, yeah, definitely.
And you know, you decided to speak out, and it's an incredibly difficult thing to do, but why did you decide to do that, Sarah?
To spread awareness, definitely, because when I was in that, I knew nothing. I just knew what I was told. I didn't know what protection orders were. Mm. I didn't know there was any help. I didn't know I could go to court and get custody. I knew nothing. I basically knew what I was told, so... Obviously, I know that there's other women or girls, especially so young like me out there, that know nothing. So if I can even help one person, then I'd be happy enough.
So it was really to help, you know, to help other people that might be in a similar position.
Absolutely.
To you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
It's a really brave thing to do. Do you feel that? Like, do you feel...
A little bit. I've been told that all weekend.
Yeah.
Like, I do feel that a little bit. But then I feel like I don't want that kind of attention either. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I'm so glad I did it and I am proud of myself.
Yeah.
But I just want to help other people, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Since, because you obviously spoke outside court after the sentencing on Friday and a lot of us would have watched your statement, which is takes a lot of courage to do. And I know you were there with family as well, supporting you. Like, have people contacted you since, or have you heard? Have people reached out to you?
I've had loads of messages, many messages and comments under the videos and stuff like that by people. And I was kind of in second thinking doing the outside the court because I was
very
more
daunting.
Nervous.
Yeah,
and I didn't want people to be like, oh, you know, thinking I was looking for attention and stuff like that. But I was overwhelmed by support. I'm still going through messages. It's very, very old, but it's such a nice feeling too. Like I feel really I feel really emotional about it.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it's great. It feels great.
I know people often say, you know, spoke to many people in a similar position before, Sarah, who'd say, like, you know, it's only when maybe they watch somebody who's gone through it like yourself outside the courts, you know, highlighting it and talking about it that, you know, raises so much awareness for
that's it. And I want to feel relatable to somebody, and I want someone to sit there and think, well, if she can do it and she knew nothing, then I definitely can, because obviously it's not right, it's not a way to live. You can't live like that. No. Definitely not.
You mentioned your partner now.
Yeah,
and heading into Christmas, and how are you feeling? Are you like looking forward to the Christmas?
Oh, I can't wait can't wait to start the new year off nice and fresh now, good. Nothing hanging over me.
Good.
Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah.
You've shopping done and...
Yeah, everything done. Yeah, just about.
Yeah, we'll let you get back to that this afternoon. Look, it was lovely to meet you. And
Thanks so much for coming into us
and, you know, all the best for the future and fair play to you. For
appreciate that.
Email's lunchtimelive@newstalk.com if you want to get in touch. I should say, Sarah, as well, just before I let you go, you know, there's a lot of listeners getting in touch, just really, I think just really sort of touched by your story today. Like, this texter here says, I'm in tears listening to Sarah. For such a young woman, I wish her every happiness for herself and Bobby, and she can look forward now to beginning her life all over again. Happy Christmas to you. Another texter as well has got in touch to say, I've actually had to pull over my car listening to Sarah this afternoon. I'm in tears. I went through exactly the same thing. I went for help with Women's Aid all on my own because I had no family support. It was so difficult, so hard. I went through years of harassment and abuse, and I did manage to get him out of my home. He eventually was sent to prison for breaking an order, a protection order. I moved away. The best thing that I ever did was getting away from this man. I haven't looked back. Even with everything that happened in my case, I don't think I realised how much courage it took me at the time until now, listening to Sarah this afternoon tell her story. You're absolutely amazing. We are amazing for being able to do this, and wishing you all the best. And that just comes in, Sarah, from another texter as well, getting in touch with us. Look, if you've been impacted or affected by any of the issues we've been talking about, the 24-hour a day helpline for women's aid that Sarah mentioned is 1800 341 900. That's 1800 341 900. And the national helpline for the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre is 1800 77 8888. The email, if you want to touch base with ourselves here, is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan,
with insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.